Hi, Ryan Ballinger. Welcome into another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you here with us. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, and follow me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballinger. So this week's show is a little bit delayed, a day later than usual, and we've kind of have that for good reason. We get some nice clarity on an outcome of the NCAA Women's Championship. We get the first round of the Irish Open in the books. What's happening right now? The AT&T Byron Nelson is starting to unfold, so we're getting a sense of who's who and what's what out in the Dallas area. And there's a lot going on in the last week, but I think we need to start off the program with a reaction to Rory McIlroy's opening 80 in the first round of the Irish Open at Royal County Down. And obviously, unless you are someone who just cannot sleep at night, you didn't see the entire round. The coverage was on Golf Channel. I think it started around 4 or 5 a.m. And you got the bulk of Rory's round in there. And as I mentioned, he shot 80. Not good. But it was a really strange round because McIlroy made 9 bogeys and 9 pars. Typically, when you shoot 80 in a golf tournament, you have a double or two or maybe a triple or a quad. Some big numbers sprinkled in there with a bunch of other modestly okay ones. And maybe a birdie or two just to add insult to injury. But that wasn't the case whatsoever for McIlroy on Thursday. He had 9 bogeys, 9 pars, and that was it. And throughout the course of the round, he got himself in bad positions off the tee, and they weren't necessarily like gorse bush bad position. I mean, he got into bad spots, but they were just places where he couldn't get the ball to the green. And he's playing alongside Martin Kaymer and Ricky Fowler. Fowler shoots 71, which was great in the conditions they had in the morning. And Kaymer is a stroke worse. They're a combined 17 over par, and neither of those two guys, who represent 3 of the 4 major championships won last year, had a birdie. That's absolutely stunning. But then you get to see some of their tee shots. The 7th hole is a great example. It was about 160 yards. Playing into a 25-mile-per-hour into and crosswind, McIlroy hits 6 iron, tries to leave it out to the right, and the ball literally is blown to the next fairway. He has probably as long for his second shot into the par 3, 160-yard par 3, as he'd hit his tee shot, which is just out of this world. And it's hard from that angle. All of a sudden, it's easy to make a bogey. And that's just kind of how it seemed to go for McIlroy. It was just hole after hole. It was like, well, not a good tee shot, and second shot wasn't all that good, and I just missed the putt for par. And he gave himself a lot of chances to make par putts, but they weren't all that close, and they weren't ones you'd expect him to make a lot of the time. So, of course, these things rack up. So the natural reaction is, of course, McIlroy's screwed. He has played his last 2 rounds on the European Tour, 2 rounds and worldwide, in 158 strokes. That's the most for him in a 2-round stretch since he was 16 years old. He just bowed out of the 2005 British Masters, shot like 83, 82 or something like that. It wasn't very good. But again, he was 16, nervous, and really just starting to find his way in the world. A couple of years later in the South African Open, got very close to that 158 total over the last 2 rounds, shot 157 and missed the cut. But we haven't really seen anything like that since. I mean, he's had bad rounds. He had an 80 in the final round of the 2011 Masters. Had an 80 in the second round of the 2010 Open Championship. That was also in very bad, windy conditions. He has 79 in the final round of Memorial. Looked like a guy who was absolutely lost or disinterested out there. That was the last time he didn't make a birdie on the card. And so, of course, there's this notion that you look at his last 5 rounds, 61, 69, 71, 78, 80. Not good. Not good. But I think you have to take at least this 80 out for a couple of reasons. And the one big one is Rory McIlroy absolutely sucks in the wind. That is just not his jam. He is not interested in it. He just tends to get very off-kilter very easily when the wind strikes and he doesn't react favorably to it, and he just kind of shuts down and loses interest. So the guy probably lost interest somewhere around the 5th consecutive bogey that he made. I think he made 4 in a row at one point to close out his front nine. He played back to front. I think he made 4 in a row. And I'm sure at that point he's like, forget this, and just kind of made his way around Royal County Down. And it wasn't good. And I think something also has to be put into motion here, that this is McIlroy's 5th consecutive week playing. And I know there are probably some of you out there who Love the rank and file tour player as well. Some of those guys play 10 weeks in a row. And guess what their best finish probably is? 35th. That's what happens when you play 10 weeks in a row. You get tired. It is very exhausting to play competitive golf. And if you haven't played competitive golf, I mean true competitive golf, like tournament golf, club championship golf at a high level, not like the C flight where you play off the white tees. I'm talking about competitive golf against really good players. It's exhausting. At the end of the round, you either want to drink your sorrows away or just drink in general, or you just want to take a nap. So that's kind of where McIlroy is, because if you look at his last 5 weeks, he started in San Francisco, won the match play, went to Ponte Vedra Beach, finished, what, sixth of the players, won the next week in Charlotte, goes over to London, plays at Wentworth, absolute dud, which was probably a good thing for him because he was trying to get ready to host this tournament this week. Now he's tournament host. He's got a lot of things on the line. He's got a lot of other things to do and media responsibilities besides just being the number one player in the world. He's also the number one player of the world and the tournament host, and lays up a total egg in the first round. And honestly, it doesn't even really matter what he shoots in the second round unless his draw is so favorable on Friday that he can shoot like 64. And that would be the only possible way he makes the cut. So this is going to be probably another miscut, third consecutive miscut for McIlroy in this championship in the Irish Open. He's had like 10 career starts, and almost half of them have been miscuts. He puts a lot of pressure on himself to win this tournament, and for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to come through with it. And that's unfortunate, too, especially this week as the host of the tournament. He's garnered so much attention, brought such a great field, but he's also put a lot of pressure on himself because he was going to donate whatever he's won this week to benefit his foundation. This entire tournament is now benefiting his foundation. That's why he's involved. And he's ultimately going to be able to cut a check for $0 and 0 cents. And that stinks. That's for him, competitively, stinks for his foundation. It's all bad. Now, this doesn't necessarily portend that McIlroy's doomed or his season's ruined or he kind of blew his load on winning two relatively unimportant events. I think that he's going to have a nice little stretch here where he's got basically two weeks, where he doesn't have to play golf, and he can just kind of go home to Florida, practice as he wants, prepare as he'd like. He can go out over to Chambers Bay when he wants. If he wants to go a little bit earlier, he can do that. If he doesn't, just wants to kind of lounge at home, he can do that. I think you almost have to look at this stretch for McIlroy as a road trip in baseball, where you go on one of those long road trips and you go play 12 games in 13 days or something like that, or 12 games in 14 days. And at the end, you're absolutely exhausted and you are very happy to have won half the games. If you slip out with a 500 record, you're doing the happy dance. If you slip out one under 500, you're still pretty happy, maybe doing some jazz hands. And for McIlroy, in a sport where if you win 10% of the time, you're amazing, McIlroy won two of his last five starts, including this one, because he's not going to win this one. Won two, missed the cut at two, and then had a top 10 finish in the other, top six finish in the other. That's a great road trip. That's a great road trip. That's great preparation for the second major of the year. It's obviously very confident. It builds a lot of confidence in him. And then he gets to Chambers Bay, and it sounds from a lot of reports so far, the course will play somewhat soft. Obviously, we don't know the USGA is going to ramp this up in the next few weeks, that the course is going to be gettable, and that's why you're going to see all these quirky things like changing pars between 1 and 18, side hill and downhill lies in the tee boxes that just don't make any sense at all. Very strange configurations to holes from one day to the next without changing the par. All of those things are going to be designed to try and confuse players, try and get in their head and try and make it a little bit more difficult to score. But if you're accurate and you get good numbers and you've got a good guy in your bag and you can hit to those numbers, you're going to be able to score on this golf course. And I think McIlroy is going to appreciate that, especially if it is not subject to much wind. And that's going to be the variable. We'll see how the sound reacts, what kind of wind comes off of it. There's obviously no trees but one on the course to block any wind. So the full brunt of it is going to be felt by the entire field, except unless you're maybe shrouded by dunes, and then it just kind of makes it more difficult to gauge. So that's a factor to think about. And we kind of forgot about it for a little while because McIlroy won the Open Championship, albeit in very benign conditions for the Open. And he's been tearing the cover off the ball and winning trophies left and right. So we've almost kind of forgotten, hey, Rory McIlroy is a terrible wind player. He's not good in the wind at all, and you should not bet on him in the wind. And then something like this happens. You go, wait, yes, he is a terrible wind player. If it's windy, he's not going to win, and that's the end of it. And that all leads into this discussion, the imminent discussion, because Ernie Els comes out and says the day before the Irish Open, like an idiot, I think Rory McIlroy is going to win more majors than Tiger. So that puts him somewhere between 15 and infinite majors. And doesn't look like that today. I mean, it certainly didn't look like that today. Golf's hard. It's not a day-to-day game. It is a lifetime game. It is you take one round in stride and put it against the next, good or bad. I mean, he's had a 61 and an 80 in his last five rounds. So that's a pretty big set of bookends there. And I think that the initial reaction is Tiger would have figured out a way to shoot 73 in his prime. He would have been a whole lot better. He would have manned up. He would have said, I'm not going to let this happen to me. I'm going to figure out a way to make these pars and escape time and time again. And then I'll get my game right. And on Friday, I'll shoot 67 and get in the tournament. That's what Tiger did at his best. What McIlroy does right now is when he's at his best, he's untouchable. He gets out, gets to a good start, deals with Thursday and Friday well, and blows the field away on the weekend. It's over. Tiger is a grinder type. Whether he was up by 10 or he was down by 10, he was trying to reach for something, whether it was the weekend, a top 10, try to win, whatever. He adjusted his goals. Always the goal was to win, but ultimately, when even he knew that wasn't possible, he found what he needed to do to be able to motivate himself. McIlroy, when he gets in bad shape, just kind of shuts it down and moves on, gets frustrated, gets angry, plays angry, misses the cut, and goes, oh, it's not so bad. Rory is not Tiger. He's not built to be. His swing is not built to be. His approach is not built to be. He's not going to make 100 cuts in a row. He might make 10 in a row. And then he's going to miss one spectacularly, maybe two in a row, and everyone will go, what's wrong with this guy? He's no good anymore. And then he's going to come back and win a tournament by 8. That is who he is. There is a lot going on in McIlroy's swing, and it hasn't gotten to the point where he's decided he's going to quiet it down so that he can be more consistent, maybe take a little off the fastball so that he has a curveball and has a more balanced set of offerings for a 3-2 pitch. It's not him. So the conditions have to be right. It's got to be parkland golf. It can't be all that windy. The greens have to be the right speed. He's got to be putting okay. So hopefully he talks to Dave Stockton the week before or the day before. And he can't have a bad one in there, or otherwise he just doesn't seem to give a crap. The only time I've ever seen McIlroy come back from a really bad round was that aforementioned 80 in the second round of the 2010 Open. And that was because he shot 63 in the first round, just had a terrible draw, got the worst of the wind while play was still going on inexplicably on that Friday. And then I think he decided to say to himself, I may not win the golf tournament, but I'm going to go down trying, and got himself into a T3 finish. Yeah, that was 10 shots behind Louis Oosthuizen, but in the B flight, he was the winner by a lot. And I think that was what he tried to prove there. So he knows Chambers Bay is a strange venue because no one knows it. He also knows he's got a great track record at the Old Course and a very good track record at Whistling Straits in one prior major, finished T3 in 2010 when he was 21 years old at the PGA Championship. So he knows he's got a couple of very favorable venues ahead, and I think he will try to find a way to put himself in that conversation, and he'll use these next 2 weeks to just kind of chill out and move on. And I think that is one thing he does extremely well, is put bad things behind him very quickly. We've seen it not only in terms of how he plays, but we've also seen it in his personal life. Obviously, the breakup from his engagement with Caroline Wozniacki last year, terrible personal problem, put it behind him, won a golf tournament, had a great summer. It made him focus. He found something positive to do with something bad that happened, and that led to a good result. So I'd be very curious to see what McIlroy does from here. Obviously, I don't expect him to make the cut. It's possible, and we could be talking next week on this show about how McIlroy won the tournament and just blew all of our minds away again, but that doesn't seem very likely for now. So the reaction from here is where we go with the U.S. Open, because we're not going to see him again until then, which makes this a really interesting time for observers of the sport and for McIlroy to see whether or not this turns into anything special or turns into something longer term in terms of struggling. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Atlantic in Dallas, Texas, you got TPC Las Colinas or Four Seasons or whatever you want to call it. Probably one of the worst golf courses on the PGA Tour. It is just flooded with rain because Texas can't seem to escape the rain right now. There's problems in Texas, in Dallas, and in Houston, obviously two of its biggest cities. Its biggest cities, actually. And the tournament, the Byron Nelson, has suffered as a result. 12 guys have withdrawn from the tournament for varied reasons. Jason Day pulled out because he felt some dizziness on the course. Ian Poulter strained something, maybe his finger, doing a gym workout, decided to pull out. Louis Oosthuizen got out. Alex Chaku won the Puerto Rico Open, got out. Kevin Kisner, who's been a couple playoffs and lost this year, got out. A bunch of other guys got out. Tommy Gainey could have gotten in this tournament. He's a former PGA Tour winner, big break contestant. The guy, you know him as Two Gloves. He was an alternate, could have gotten into this field, said, nah, no thanks, I'm going to still play the Web.com Tour event this week. And I understand why you don't want to all of a sudden think about preparing for an opportunity to get your PGA Tour status back when you're thinking about it from a season-long perspective. That's why he's playing the Rex Hospital Open this week for the Web.com Tour. And then you go out, and Las Colinas has this very strange track record of producing guys as champions that aren't necessarily all that well-known, but should be well-known and may eventually become household names, especially in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, you think about Day, won 2011. You got Keegan Bradley in 2011. You got Jason Duffner as a former winner. Sangmoon Bae, and Brendan Todd. And all those players are names that you probably know because they won this tournament, but obviously, Day, Duffner, and Bradley wanted to do some very, very nice things either in that year or in years to follow. So this tournament is a harbinger of potential future success. It just turns out that more often than not, the winner, you kind of go, who's that? Oh, that's that guy. Yeah, that's right. And then all of a sudden, they get on your radar and they start doing better things. It looks like because they're playing Lift Clean in Place in closely mown areas, at least for the first 2 days. They'll probably do it on the weekend, too. There's an expectation of rain in the forecast. There's a 40% chance of rain in the Dallas area today and throughout much of the rest of the week. There's a high percentage chance. There's a decent chance this goes to Monday, and I think you just kind of have to throw this week away if you're a top player. Obviously, with Day out, he's no longer there. You think about Matt Kuchar, Jordan Spieth, Jimmy Walker, Hunter Mahan, Dustin Johnson. Those guys could do really well this week, and I don't necessarily think it would take a whole lot of momentum or give them a whole lot of momentum. Spieth's got momentum, had a chance to win a Colonial, three putt in a bad hole away, would have won by two or three shots. Johnson's playing not as good as when he came out the gate from his suspension / leave of absence, but he's still playing pretty good golf. Jimmy Walker is falling off after his second win, not playing great, just playing kind of mediocre golf, but he would be a very interesting guy to look at the U.S. Open as well. And then you've got a whole bunch of guys on the leaderboard right now, and we won't go into them because by the time you listen to this, it will have all changed. But you'll see a lot of names up at the top of the leaderboard probably after the morning session and the afternoon where you go, they don't have a chance to win. And it'll sort itself out over the weekend, and we'll probably get a winner in a record-scoring territory because of the Lift Clean in Place rules and because everything's so soft. And really, this course is built on its ability to present windy challenges and get dried out and make it hard to play. That's not really going to happen this weekend. So it'll be interesting to see how the winning score is affected, how the players are affected, the better players are affected. Because if you look at a lot of great tournaments, I mean, when we think about major championships, you think 12 under or less is kind of your winning score, ideally, unless you're the U.S. Open where you want it to be around even par. But for three of the four majors, anywhere from like 6 to 14 under par is a good score. That depending on the venue, depending on the week, weather conditions, all that stuff. So that's not going to be the case here this week. Probably with all of the rain and stuff, it could be 15 or 16 under par, maybe even 20 under par. That changes the complexion of a tournament, changes how guys approach things. It's frankly just not a very good representation of what a bigger field on a tougher stage will do. Or, you know, better feel on a tougher stage will do. So I think a lot of guys have probably throttled back and said, I'm just going to do this, going to get through it, going to enjoy it, try to do the best I can, but I'm not going to take anything personally or think anything of it if I don't walk away from here with a win or a top 10 or a top 25 or whatever. So I find that pretty interesting. The last thing I want to talk about for a few minutes here, and it deserves some love, is the NCAA Women's Golf Championship. Wrapped up yesterday at the Concession Club at Bradenton, Florida. Jack Nicklaus' design gone horribly wrong because his green complexes are absolute garbage. And I don't understand why Nicklaus, at that point in his life, absolutely insisted on greens that are incomprehensible, that have very few usable pin placements, that are just so severe in spots that it just doesn't make any sense to putt on them at all. You'd much rather just, like, kick it into the hole. But from tee to green, it's a great golf course. And it hosted the women this week. It hosts the men as we're speaking right now for the individual championship, and we'll host the team championship matches next week, on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I think the women's final went for the first time to the match play. The men had done it for, I guess, the better part of 7 or 8 years. They had made that switch over from, instead of the best 4 of 6 or best 5 or whatever they were doing at that point, aggregate, stroke play, overtime, alongside the individual championship. They decided, scratch that, we're going to have an individual championship, and then we're going to have qualifying based on those things for the team championship. And the team championship would then be eight teams squaring off, 2 matches the first day. So you'd have your quarterfinals down to 4, and then your 4-2, you'd have your championship match the next day. And it's worked very, very well. Obviously, you had Augusta State, now Georgia Regents in there. You had Alabama in there for a couple of times each. You got Texas in there when Jordan Spieth, his 1 year, they won that year, and then he turns pro and does his thing. It's been a really, I think, a boon for the NCAA Men's Championship, so it was a good decision to go that route for the Women's Championship. And, of course, there's a lot of kvetching and bitching throughout aspects of the women's golf community because, especially for the top-tier teams, you think about Duke especially, and I unfortunately, I'm kind of privy to some of this in private messages and all that stuff, but you could see the complaining from those pockets of better programs if they didn't get to the final, and the final was Baylor and Stanford. And they were complaining because in a stroke play situation, every shot counts, every player counts. So if you do that, then your garbage player that doesn't break 90 all week drags the team down. And therefore, the player or the team with the better players who are more consistent that have all their rounds in the 70s or almost all one in the 80, low 80s, they're the team that's going to win. And it has really no bearing on the individual and the team together. You have to have 5 good individuals to make it work. I don't know that I've always liked that format. Stroke play, don't get me wrong. Stroke play almost always, in major championship situations, identifies the best individual player. But in a team sport where it's a team title, you can't have a competition that really is individual-based, where you throw out the garbage scores and then you have the best team, supposedly, that wins. I love the match play aspect, and I loved what it did for this championship, because the match between Baylor and Stanford put together 2 very unique groups of 5, pit them against one another in matches that I found very compelling, and you always have these waves of emotion and waves of momentum in match play, and you see it in individual matches, but it really becomes an even bigger deal in a 5-match set where you got to win 3 points to get the championship. That's not a lot of matches, so they get decided fairly quickly, but there also seems to be that momentum where if you get a lot of one color on the board, they show up, and then it changes a little bit. If it does, everyone changes, and then it kind of comes back to the mean a little bit, and you get this final answer. And that's how it worked out for Stanford. They got 2 points. Baylor got 2 points, and it came down to Mariah Stackhouse and Haley Davis. Haley Davis is one of the best players in the world. She's, I think, top 25 in the world amateur golf ranking. She basically single-handedly turned Baylor into a program worth going to and caring about. And then you've got Mariah Stackhouse, who has done a lot of things in golf. She's been on the Curtis Cup team. She's been in those attention-grabbing situations. And it also just so happens that she's an African-American, which makes her stand out in the sport, so she gets even more attention for that. She gets put into the anchor match, and her coach, Ann Murphy, says, go out and get the point. And throughout the entire round, really, Stackhouse did not look like someone who was going to win this thing. I mean, she fell 2 down with 2 to play. 2 down with 2 to play. And she gets the par 5 17th, hits a modest drive, leaves 210 yards into the hole from the fairway, hits a great, great shot. It cuts, goes onto the green, leaves her a 15-foot eagle putt. She cozies it up to a foot, foot and a half, and Davis has to make the putt to win, her birdie putt, to win, to tie the hole at least and win the match. And she can't do it. So then we go to 18, and on 18, Haley Davis hits a bad drive, has to pitch out to the front of the green. She doesn't get up and down, but then again, it doesn't even really matter because Stackhouse hits it to 15 feet or 10 feet or whatever it is and just puts it straight in the hole. They go off to the 19th hole. This is great drama. And then on the 19th hole, both players hit into the green. Davis misses the green. She shouldn't have missed from 133 yards. Inexcusable for a player of her talent. Stackhouse hits at the pin, goes a little long, cozies up for par. Davis has a four-footer after, maybe five-footer after hitting onto the green, putting up to extend this thing. And she kind of, she either misread it or she pushed it just a smidge and misses. And all of a sudden, Stanford's the national champion. And I know you don't want a tournament, any kind of championship, to be decided on a mistake. That's not the fun way to do it. But it happens so often in golf. And then Stanford erupts, and they get their first women's championship. And I think, obviously, they're no longer skeptical about the match play format, but they were going into it. And I think so, too, was probably Baylor, but they were beneficiaries of it because they had players who had no business being in that five-person lineup. But that's the team they brought, and that's the team they had to use. And I really like that. And I hope that Golf Channel, and kudos to them for putting the effort to putting on a modestly good telecast for this and for the men's championship in back-to-back weeks. I hope that college golf gets a nice rub because of this, because I didn't follow much college golf early in my career, and I still really don't, but I love watching collegiate athletes play on the highest level because it just means something different to them than it does to the pros every week who are cashing a check. It means a legacy. It means something that can't be taken away from you. And I really appreciate that and respect that. So congratulations to Mariah Stackhouse and Murphy. The entire Stanford team, Nerd Nation, did it. And they won their 107th NCAA team championship, which is pretty incredible. That'll do it for us this week on the show. Next week on the program, we will go over the Irish Open. We'll get a sense of Memorial Week and start our breakdown for the U.S. Open. If you enjoyed this week's show, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes or the podcast listening service of your choice. Send your questions to me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, thegolfnewsnet.com. Find my work on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf Blog, sports.yahoo.com. And if you're a subscriber to this show through iTunes or another podcasting service, please check out Golf News Net Radio, which is a 24/7 stream of golf talk available on our website, golfnewsnet.com, as well the TuneIn Radio app. Until next week, I'm Ryan Belge saying thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.